This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn with me, Dashrin Johan. Three Malaysian mothers, represented by Family Frontiers, finally received their children's citizenship confirmation certificate at the National Registration Department headquarters yesterday. Now, this comes at the heels of a historic KL High Court ruling last September that Malaysian mothers have the right to confer citizenship to their children born overseas, similar to overseas-born children of Malaysian fathers. Now, despite this ruling, many mothers still have to jump through hoops to confer citizenship. So joining me on the show today to discuss all of this and more is Suri Kemper. She's the president of Family Frontiers, as well as Adeline Adam Teo. She is a plaintiff and one of the affected mothers in this whole conundrum. And Adeline successfully attained citizenship confirmation certificate for her son 2 days ago. Welcome to the show, ladies. How are y'all doing?
We're good. Thank you so much for having us.
First of all, congratulations, Adeline. Your son has finally received his citizenship confirmation certificate. How are you feeling? How is he feeling? How important is this to you?
Oh, I am overjoyed. This has been so long in the making. And when it finally arrived, I just couldn't believe it, right? As for him, he is quite clueless on what's going on.
Right.
He does enjoy going to Putrajaya. He thinks it's a great experience. So, that's wonderful. And it's so important for myself and for the family because it means that we get to be together. And that's what's so important to us.
Tell us a little bit about your journey. How long have you been waiting to confer your citizenship onto your son? And what were the challenges you faced along the way?
I started the journey when I found out that I was pregnant. So when he was still in my womb, he's now 9 years old, he's turning 10. So I would say it's a decade long journey. Mm. And it's been really long and arduous. You know, I never thought that this would even be an issue because I thought I had done my due diligence correctly. You know, I called up the embassies, I emailed them when I was still pregnant, just trying to find out what the registration process would be like for me as a Malaysian living overseas. And I was given the assurance that it would be quite smooth, there would be no issues, puan boleh, you know, daftar, pejabat, the embassy, tak ada masalah. So I didn't give 2 cents about it, but it turned out to be really, really quite horrendous, right? And it's caused severe strain in our family, my well-being. And if the mom is not well, well, you see the family is not well, right? It's been quite stressful. So when I had my son, it was really a difficult situation because he was born in a third country. He was not born in my country, nor my husband's country, but we were living in a third country. And unfortunately, when he was born, he did not qualify for automatic citizenship for any countries. Right. So my child was stateless, actually. And this is, I think, a very important point to make because a lot of times we are told that, oh, ikut bapa, you know, just follow the father's citizenship. Ah, what's the big deal? But actually, this is not the case for many mothers and myself included. In the end, we managed to obtain citizenship for my son by application. Through a humanitarian appeal, actually, to his father's country. But that is not home for us, right? Home
right.
is Malaysia. Mm-hmm. This has always been our first choice and our only choice.
Suri, I want to ask you about the KL High Court ruling last September, right? Because that was something many considered historic. Remind us again what was so significant about that High Court ruling.
So it meant that for the first time in Malaysian history, women were recognized as equals to men, at least with regards to being able to confer citizenship to our children. So before, if a Malaysian woman married a non-Malaysian man and they had a child and that child was then born abroad, that child would not get Malaysian citizenship automatically. So or what is known as by operation of law,
right?
Meaning the law doesn't recognize automatic citizenship, but you have to actually apply for citizenship, which under what is known as Article 15(2) of the Federal Constitution means like any other Tom, Dick, and Harry, essentially, mm-hmm. you have to apply for citizenship for your child, right? And whether or not the child is then granted citizenship is subject to the KDN's discretion, in particular, the minister's discretion, right?
Right.
And you know, some people would say, oh, it's okay, just go through the process, you'll get it. But it's not that easy. I mean, if you follow just last year's statistics that were issued in Parliament recently, the success rate based on last year's statistics is 0%. Zero citizenship applications were approved in 2021. So it's not that easy, you know. It's really up to the behest and whims of minister. And at the same time, you have then, you know, children exist, right? They continue to exist. And so now for the first time, the children of Malaysian women are recognized as Malaysian citizens by operation of law, and that citizenship is a right that they are entitled to. And that is what makes this so absolutely historic.
Absolutely. And Adeline, you know, just now you brought up something that people tend to say. It's like, what's the big deal? Just follow the father's citizenship. So tell us, what is the big deal? What are some of the struggles your son and your family had to go through over the past decade as a result of not being able to attain Malaysian citizenship?
Numerous, right? So first of all, when he was born, we couldn't even have the akikah ceremony for him. Because we wanted to do it with the great-grandparents, with the grandparents in Malaysia. But and this ceremony of welcoming the birth of a child would typically be performed when the child is still a baby, right? And we couldn't come home for it. And it was really sad because this is a very important religious and cultural aspect in tradition in our family. And we couldn't fulfill this. Right. So we finally managed to do it when he was already walking around, a toddler.
Right.
Better late than never. but that was one of the first challenges I faced. You know, we couldn't bring the baby back to Malaysia to meet the family. Right. And as he grew bigger, you know, living in Malaysia as a non-citizen poses so many challenges. Number one. When he was, 6 years old, I was getting him ready to go to school. I went to so many government schools and I realized that, you know, admission to schools would really depend really on the availability of spaces, the discretion of the Guru Besar Prime, and each year the child would most likely enter school late. So other kids will already start schooling, you know, they'll get their books, they'll know all the classmates and teachers, but my kid will probably come in quite late, quite a few weeks later. And I did not want this to happen to him because he's already quite a shy child. And to be pushed back further because of this distinction is just not right. Access to healthcare is another big thing. This is our, you know, we're just going to a clinic, kesihatan. It's not available to us, right?
Right.
Just so many. So it's really heart-wrenching because, you know, the other day, my boy, the teachers asked him, so tell us, tell us about yourself. Where do you come from? You know, tell us about your home country. And he told the teacher about his kampung, which is Kuching, Sarawak. Mm-hmm. He tells about all the traditions that all the celebrations that he partakes in, you know, Hari Raya and all that. But he has to say that, oh, I am a Hong Kong citizen. So it was just so ridiculous because he is growing up as a Malaysian, yet he has to say that I am not Malaysian because apparently I hold this blue-coloured passport which says I'm from Hong Kong. And he doesn't speak Cantonese, he doesn't know anything about Hong Kong. So it's really heart-wrenching to see kids going through, you know, such identity crises so early on. It's absolutely not necessary.
Is it confusing? Was it ever confusing for your son? And I'm wondering, when they are growing up, how do you explain these things to them, right? Because at the start you said, you know, kids are kids, you know, they're not necessarily they're going to understand the severity of what's going on, or they don't may not get the bigger picture. You know, a trip to the NRD is like a road trip to Putrajaya, and it can be really fun, and that's great, right? It gives us that sense of joy and all as well. But how was it for you trying to explain the circumstances to your child?
I would say I was very factual, mm-hmm. right? And you know, it's nice that kids take things at face value. There's not much that goes into it, and it's okay. You know, I think. Now he loves Putrajaya. I'm glad we've instilled that in him. Great. And now he knows that he holds a passport. He will be holding a passport just like his mommy's passport.
That's absolutely wonderful. Suri, what are some of the other some other challenges that children or their families in these kind of circumstances face?
Start this like responding to this question by picking up on a point that Adeline made earlier, right? Which is like, I mean, which is about how our children who hold a foreign passport, you know, like, and this affects their mental health, right? Are told in subtle ways that they are always different. They're perpetually reminded that they're different. And this can be through like school presentations, you know, like the one Adeline was talking about earlier. You know, when someone calls their name, or when you go line up at the airport and you want to come back into the country, and your mom goes into the Malaysian lane and you have to go to the foreign lane, you know. So like there are all these little microaggressions that are perpetrated on our children, which reinforce this notion that they are and always will be different, right? And yes, we can play it off. We can try as mothers to shield them from the effects of these microaggressions, but they are there nonetheless. And that's why I feel like I definitely agree with Adeline when she's saying, you know, it's so heart-wrenching. So the other thing, I think some other challenges that the other children have faced include the forced separation. I think that's a big issue that often gets overlooked because we tend to not consider what happens to a child once they turn 21, right? Because at this point, the child is no longer a dependent. But what I guess the government then fails to see is that when the child is grown up here, their kampong is here, they know no other family in other parts of the world, the child speaks BM alongside other languages, the child, you know, is at their heart Malaysian. And to tell them that they... you know, at 21, they cannot legally stay here simply because they've kind of aged out and are no longer a dependent on the mother is just cruel, right? I mean, they know no other family, but then to tell them, no, sorry, you can't stay because about visa, you know, you don't have a visa. Right. It's terrible. The other thing also related to forced separation is traveling, right? Especially due to COVID. Some families have been separated, binational families have been separated for the last 2 years. So many families I know have now taken to meeting in Langkawi due to the lifting of travel restrictions in that little Langkawi bubble, right?
Wow.
Because they haven't been able to, because their children are non-citizens, and non-citizens are not allowed because of COVID restrictions to come back into the country, right? Under any circumstances, because reuniting with families is not considered a valid enough reason to come into Malaysia. And so a lot of families have not seen their children or their grandparents in that long. There's also the issue of statelessness, which Adeline mentioned earlier, so I won't delve into that. I think healthcare was another big issue because, you know, especially for those vaccines, access to vaccines is one thing, you know, but then that those children with disabilities or chronic diseases and require long-term healthcare. You know, we've had mothers in our group who've had to choose, you know, who've had children on the autism spectrum and have had to choose which child to send for therapy, you know, like how do you make these difficult choices because you're financially burdened and you can only afford therapy for one child, right? All of these things are really difficult, challenges that the children and their mothers have had to go through.
On the show with me today are Suri Kemper of Family Frontiers, as well as Adeline Adam Teo, one of the affected mothers. After the break, I asked them if patriarchal forces are still at play in this issue despite the landmark court ruling last September. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Darshan Johan, and on the show with me today are Suri Kemper, president of Family Frontiers, as well as Adeline Teo. She is an affected mother, as well as one of the plaintiffs on the cases, which saw a landmark ruling last September, in which the court decided that, you know, right now, you know, Malaysian mothers have the right, just as Malaysian fathers, to confer their citizenship onto their overseas-born children. But despite this landmark ruling, many mothers still have to go through hoops. They still face a lot of challenges and obstacles to finally get that official recognition and on the certificate to say that, yes, okay, now officially things are done. You know, your children are Malaysian citizens. So that's what we are discussing today. So, Adeline, tell me about what happened exactly 2 days ago. Because it sounds absolutely ridiculous. At the same time, it sounds like a very, very Malaysian issue. And what I'm talking about is reports indicate that there was another delay when it came to attaining your son's citizenship certificate 2 days ago. And it boiled down to a printer issue or printer problem. What on earth happened 2 days ago at the NRD?
So on Friday, we received a letter from our lawyers to say that the three mothers who had submitted their applications here in Putrajaya could go to the JPN office on Tuesday, on Monday, 21st of February, 2:30 p.m. to pick up the certificates, right?
Right.
So that's what we thought would happen, is that we would go and we would pick up our certificates that would have been printed already, ready for collection, right? Mm-hmm. And we were welcomed by the JPN offices. We paid 30 ringgit each for the issuance of the certificates. But unfortunately, we were informed that the certificates couldn't be printed because of some issue with the printer settings.
That, how do you even process something like that? Like, how does that even make sense?
It was really disappointing. It was really disappointing because we kept waiting and waiting and waiting for the printer to work, right? And it didn't work. The issue couldn't be resolved until the offices closed. At about close to 5 p.m., they said, okay, we're very sorry. Can you please come back in 14 working days?
14 working days?
Mm-hmm. And then we will then issue, the actual certificate, right? So we did not have sight of our, Nombor sijil of our child's citizenship. We did not know what was going on, and then we proceeded to go downstairs. And thank you to the press who were waiting the whole afternoon. It was a really hot afternoon, and then there was a thunderstorm, and yet they waited for us at the exit. And then we gave a press conference after. And two officers actually came back to locate us mothers at the exit and asked us if we could actually wait a little longer as they would try to issue the certificates manually instead.
Okay.
Yes, and so we waited. We did get the certificates issued, actually printed eventually.
Okay.
And we left the building very, very happy that evening, almost at 6:30.
Yeah. And it is, ultimately you go through all of this and, what matters is you get the certificate, and it is a very joyous moment. It's a very, momentous situation, But Suri, you know, what's going on here? You know, a printer issue may be, you know, something very silly. But even then, you know, they say things like, you know, 14 working days. I've had printer issues. I never needed 14 days to resolve a printer problem. What's going on here? You know, and apart from these sort of technical sort of issues, has it been smooth sailing for mothers to confer citizenship since the landmark court ruling?
I can answer this question on two levels. I feel like the first one is to say, I feel like printer issues should be a hashtag to signify every problem that is trivial, but is ultimately the roadblock, right? Mm-hmm. It is the essence of all the problems that have beset mothers in this situation. I mean, to the outsider, it sounds so reme and so trivial, right? Printer issue. But in reality, it really is like essentially what stood between a child's access to citizenship and equal treatment, which then further translates into being able, like paying higher school fees, paying higher fees for healthcare, unending hours spent commuting to obtain a child's visa every 3 to 6 months, right? Like the ultimate thing that stood between that and some relative freedom is a printer issue.
Yeah.
So, you know, and right, it's ridiculous. So it's that bureaucracy has really been like the bane of this, like the underlying bane of this problem. Mm-hmm. But since the judgment came in, on a more serious note, since the judgment came in September, I wouldn't really say that it's been smooth sailing, right? The big boogeyman in the room is that the government, of course, has appealed the decision and has not withdrawn its appeal, right? Which means we're not home free. And there will be a hearing at the Court of Appeal this coming 23rd March.
And is this bureaucracy problem because of this appeal? Because, you know, I'm wondering, you know, why so much bureaucracy? Suri, are patriarchal forces still at play despite the court's ruling? Or is it just merely a case of, you know, poor communication from the top to the bottom?
I think, to be honest, I mean, underlying it, I think there are some patriarchal tensions there. I mean, and you can see it, right, from legally at least. I mean, the government, so when we won the case at the high court level and we obtained that fantastic judgment, you know, the government tried to apply for a stay of execution. And that was then dismissed. They appealed, right? And then mm-hmm. they also applied for a stay of execution, which was then dismissed by the Court of Appeal, that's meaning right. mothers can submit the documents and can go ahead and proceed, even though the hearing is coming up on the 23rd of March. And then when we submitted, when that happened, we had the mothers, we had Adeline and two other mothers who were in Malaysia actually apply, right? To, okay, let's see when we can get it in late December. So they submitted their documents in late December, and then we had to bring along the press. And since then, we had to, like, our legal team wrote in two letters to JPN before they finally said, okay, well, come and pick it up yesterday, right? Come and pick it up on the 21st at 2:30 p.m. at JPN. Why so much bureaucracy? I mean, that's a really good question. And to be honest, I want to be kind because the JPN officers that we've met, at least in person, you could tell they were really trying.
Right.
Right. And so I want to think they're still figuring things out, including printer settings. But I also want to weigh this against the decades long and grueling wait that mothers have had to endure and go through and the hardships that they've had to endure since the 1960s. Okay. Since this was a law, like mothers have had to endure the hardships that have come with it at every level. And mm-hmm. they're all encompassing. They're not just, it's so leche to go and drive to Putrajaya. No, it's actually like it's all encompassing, as we talked about earlier. And that kind of pain, including forced family separation, and that kind of pain is really difficult to ignore. And so what I would really like is for the government to recognize how difficult this has been for Malaysian women, for Malaysian citizens, and to do everything in their power to right this wrong and to do this quickly. Because bureaucracy at the end of the day, you know, is at some level, it's not an acceptable excuse, right? I mean, if and it's also at some level, potentially a choice, because if we can issue citizenship applications to footballers and politicians' wives within a day,
right?
Why does it take so long to process the paperwork for children of our own citizens, right?
And I'm also wondering, Suri, if, you know, because what, you know, even what we are talking about are, you know, perhaps certain issues that get highlighted. You know, like you said yesterday, there was a strong media support. You had Family Frontiers, Adeline. You know, it went together as a group and you tried to push, and eventually, you know, the printer somehow got fixed and yada, 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 and y'all got the certificate. Are there loads of instances where mothers would go and they say, you know, printer problem, and then the mom is like, okay, I don't know what to do now. I guess I'll just go back, you know, even if I have to drive an hour and a half, and then I'll come back the next time and then hope for the best. Do these situations happen a lot as well?
Well, we can't really speak to like this particular situation, mm-hmm. right? Because this is the first time. Yesterday was the first time, right?
Yes.
But when it comes to bureaucracy and bureaucratic delays, especially for the mothers who've had to go to various government agencies, right? And even in submitting these documents, I mean, the process hasn't been easy. They've had to take the birth certificates of their children, go to foreign embassies, get them validated, come back, go to Wisma Putra, get them validated again, you know, come back. So it's been really arduous, and it's not just been... it's been throughout that process, which is why that hashtag printer issues for me is like describes so well the
right.
issues that mothers have had to go through, right? And yes, that's precisely why I think doing this as a group collectively has been such a powerful statement, because the fact that the media has been there supporting us, right? Mm-hmm. Adeline, I mean, it's just been amazing, because they've been following this story. And I think that's been part of the push in getting the issues recognized. Because one mother, nobody cares. Two mothers, again, nobody cares. You know, in fact, here we'll issue you something to kind of smooth things over. But a group, mm-hmm. you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, the media covering these issues, it really shows like... how big the issue is, how heavy, and the impact that it has on the lives of everyday lives of Malaysians. And I think that's, and you know, to be honest, people are so surprised, and because of the attention this has gotten from the media, people are so surprised to learn that Malaysia does not give women the equal right to confer citizenship. And people are quite horrified, to be honest.
Right.
And people get angry and they want to support the cause. And I think that has been like the biggest push for the government to do something about this. I think any rational person listening to this is just like, oh my God, no, this needs to change.
Adeline, you know, the Malaysian Ismail Sabri-led government has filed for an appeal against the decision and applied for a stay on the High Court's decision. You know, this is... After the monumental High Court ruling last September, which many people thought, okay, that would be the end. But then now you have this appeal and all of that. What is your message to the government?
My message is to do the right thing. Very simply, listen to your heart, do the right thing for the Malaysians. Right? This is Keluarga Malaysia. Let's, you know, walk the talk. And the easiest and quickest way to do it is to just withdraw the appeal. Very simple. With a stroke of a pen, all this can be resolved. And so many heartbreaks, so much suffering can end immediately. So I hope the Prime Minister is listening, that with just his small intervention, it can all be resolved. You know, yesterday it was really sad. So when I was, you know, waiting in the room to get the citizenship papers, there was this mother who drove up all the way from Johor, right? And her father drove her up, you know, with the grandchild. Three Malaysians, three generations. I mean, why put them through this, you know? One afternoon, drive up all the way to KL and all the way back to Johor, right? shouldn't the grandfather be enjoying time with his granddaughter now, mm-hmm. rather than, you know, trying so hard to even submit some papers? And I heard that their application, the submission could not be completed because they were missing one document. It's really heartbreaking, you know.
It really is.
It's really affecting everyone.
What next? What next can we do so that, you know, like Arlene says, a three generations of Malaysians don't have to drive 400 kilometers, 300 something kilometers, and then still be told that you cannot submit your documentations and they cannot process these documentations because of one missing paper here, one missing paper somewhere else. And this is on top of the God knows how many years, decades maybe, of that family already waiting, many, many other families too. What can be done next? What are you hoping for?
Oh, gosh. I mean, like Adeline, I'm hoping that the government will withdraw its appeal. But, you know, if that and recognize Malaysian women as equals in the eyes of the law and in practice. And if it doesn't, I would like for us to lock in the progress that we've made thus far with another win at the Court of Appeal. I would love for that to happen. But these are all external. And yes, of course, I would like for the government to make good on its promise of amending the federal constitution. You know, if this is what it takes for them to recognize women, if this is, you know, what they need in order to clarify to themselves that women are equal. But of course, these are all external to us, right? So what can we as citizens do? Mm-hmm. To be honest, I think the elections are around the corner. And I think if the government has not yet amended the federal constitution or has not yet withdrawn the appeal and insists on treating women like second-class citizens, I honestly believe that this deserves to be an election issue. I think that citizens can go out and ask their MPs and their state representatives, you know, what is, you know, is this an issue you care about and how are you going to affect change? We have plenty of candidates, clearly, with plenty of political parties. And I think as regular citizens, we should be asking our representatives, the people that we are hoping to elect into government, what they are going to do about this. We've seen three governments within the last 2 years, right? Three governments. Mm-hmm. It's time. And we've lived through this. Malaysian women have lived with this situation for the last 60 something years. It is time for change. And we as citizens can make that happen because we have the power. We are ultimately, you know, the power holders in this situation. And we can make that change. And I think we can ask our representatives if they care about this issue, what they're doing and how they're going to make this a reality. I also think that public support on the issue is really, really crucial. Public voices, hearing people speak about the issue, stating their outrage,
certainly,
you know, is really important. Writing on social media, into the online news portals, or even into like traditional media. I think that's so important, and it's been so helpful and really gratifying, you know, to see the waves of support we receive from Malaysians, both in Malaysia and abroad. So, and I would really appeal to all Malaysians to continue doing that, please.
You know, Adeline, from my perspective, right, this seems like a very straightforward issue, right? For the sake of, you know, child's well-being, safety, the family's mental health overall, the family's well-being and all of that, it's very simple. A mother should be allowed to confer their citizenships to their kids. What's preventing the various administrations? Because like Suri mentioned, this isn't just a one administration or not doing their jobs effectively. This has been an issue for the longest time. What's preventing the various administrations we've had over the years to amend this constitution? What's actually at the root of the problem here?
I believe it's a lack of understanding. Perhaps it's a purposeful lack of empathy, you know, and of course, patriarchy is a great force too, right? And also, I believe that perhaps Malaysians don't know that we can affect change as well, that we elect the policymakers, And this is a policy issue. The fact that us mothers had no other recourse, yeah, we had to go to the judicial route, meant that we had nowhere else to go. We had no other door to knock on. And this should not have been the case, especially for your own citizens, right? And so it's been very disappointing. It is a multi-pronged issue, but like Suri said, you know, we can affect change, and we as the rakyat should keep on voicing all these injustices until true change is brought about. We know at this point it's just merely a band-aid. You know, there is a long-standing issue we have to solve, because really, I mean, yeah, today, you know, yesterday I got it for my son, but there are so many other mothers right now just having such a tough time. So what about them, you know? It's really disheartening.
Ladies, before we wrap this conversation up, would you all have some final thoughts or a final message that you'd like to leave us with?
So yesterday, I was given a ride that should not have been denied in the first place, you know? I should have gotten it 10 years ago, right? But, you know, justice has served Malaysian women, right? And that simple act yesterday, what seems so simple, actually has truly brought families closer together, right? My son can now stay in Malaysia without me having to worry about him, you know, having to be, you know, separated from me. And it's this... this gift, I would say, has been long overdue. So I also want to extend my thanks really to all the JPN officers. You know, sometimes they too have to, you know, perform their duties. And you can see the heartbreak. You can see in their faces, they don't want it for us either, right? So I really want to extend my thanks to all the officers who assisted us yesterday, to all the media who helped out. And let's keep the conversation going.
Suri?
Fundamentally, I think this decision is about the well-being of Malaysian families, specifically Malaysian women and our children, and then everyone who's in the extended family, right? And of course, spouses as well. And our constitution actually recognizes this fundamental right, particularly through Article 8.2, which identifies gender as a category for non-discrimination, right? Malaysia has a chance of being the amazing country that we want it to be. But we can only make that happen with your support. And for that, you know, like, I really want to thank everyone out there who's been supporting us, the media, the, like, you know, JPN officers who've been responsive, the parents, mothers who've continued to speak out. I think that's been key in this, because we've had so many mothers who've been willing to tell their stories and share their experiences, you know, and really, like, And the public, really, for continuing to speak out and giving us a platform to speak about the issue. We cannot hope for people to do it for us, right? We have to be the ones to continue asking, because equality doesn't get served, and our rights don't get served to us on a silver platter. We have to continue demanding for it. And that is precisely what we are continuing to do and going to continue to do.
On that note, Suri, Adeline, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you for having us.
That was Suri Kemper, President of Family Frontiers, and Adeline Teo. She's an affected mother. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashan Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.